James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us today. Lots to talk about today. We're going to have a busy show today. We've got three guests today. We've got, at the bottom of the first hour, Ray McGovern. You've all heard Ray on this program before. Ray, a former CIA analyst. We're going to be talking about the Bush veto of the torture bill. And then at the top of the next hour, we're going to have Sam Provenza in. Sam is a former sergeant who specialized in intelligence analysis and knows all about the torture business and what is and is not allowed. And at around 4:45 today, we're going to have Representative Adam Schiff from California to talk about the contempt citations for Harriet Mears and John Bolton. So we've got a busy, busy show today. We hope you'll make it even busier by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. No matter what you'd like to talk about, if you'd like to talk about the primary going on right now, and yes, it is still going on, Mississippi, no big surprise. Maybe the margin was a little bit bigger than a lot of people thought it would be, but no real surprise there. So now we've got 6 long weeks until Pennsylvania comes up, and that's going to be a long, long time. Accusations flying back and forth, surrogates for the candidates saying things they should not say. Geraldine Ferraro, what the hell is wrong with her saying what she did? My, oh, my, oh, my. I mean, even if she believes that, okay, it's her right to believe that if she wants to. Fine. If you want to be that idiotic, go right ahead, Geraldine. But don't represent somebody's campaign. And I'm not sure she's an official representative of the campaign, but don't represent somebody's campaign and do something like that. Just plain stupid. Just plain stupid. Just as stupid as that woman last week, what was it, calling Hillary a monster. These people, let Barack and let Hillary do the talking, and everybody else just shut up. I am so tired of it. And you know, the press gets a hold of these stories, and yada, 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 on and on and on, and it drones on. And speaking of the press, I see Tucker Carlson has got, what, another week of his show, and then he's going to be relegated to the back bench at MSNBC. Thank you, people at MSNBC. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. So anyway, that's what's happening. And if you'd like to give us a call, 866-546-5254. I guess I said that. I wanted to give you the results. As you know, last Thursday, we announced that we were having a pledge drive on the program, that we needed to raise some dollars for the show to help defray expenses. It is not free, you know. And the results of our pledge drive, and I'm always completely honest with you folks, we got exactly 2 donations. Hey, I should play some music right now. 2. Thanks to those 2. my heartfelt thanks to those two. And thanks to those of you who have continued to support the program all along. But not a big success, would you say? I guess I won't be trying that again anytime soon, and you know what that means anyway. I'm a bit under the weather today, so if I don't sound quite as sharp as I normally do, you know, I'm always so sharp, you know. I was sitting at the doctor's office yesterday, and the doctor ran behind, I mean, way behind, like an hour and a half behind. And by the time, you know, why do doctors do that? You sit in the waiting room. First of all, they overbook, just like the airlines do. Secondly, they take you back into a little room, and then you sit in that little room. It's like staging areas. And then you sit back in the second stage, and you wait for the doctor, and every time you hear footsteps coming down the hall, you go, oh, yeah, it's my turn, it's my turn. No, they keep walking by, and finally they get to you. And the snowbirds are here. The storms are over up north for a while, so the airplanes, it seems like they've been coming in bumper to bumper here at Southwest Regional Airport here in Southwest Florida. Just an unbelievable amount of people here right now, and I don't blame them. I'd want to get away from all that mess up there, too. But I understand the snow is melting in Ohio, and things are going along nicely, and maybe that'll be it for the season. Maybe we won't have any nasty, nasty storms for the rest of the year. Elliot Spitzer. I have to admit, the story about Elliot, and again, here we are with the press just going mad over something, just going crazy with a story. They just got to run nuts with it 24/7. Elliot Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer. I admit the story about Spitzer was a surprise. It wasn't a surprise that some big shot politician would hire a whore, but it was a surprise. It was Elliot Spitzer. I mean, he's a big boy, he's rich and all, and he's able to take care of himself. But what I absolutely hate, I hate it when something like this happens, and I felt the same way about Senator Vitter's wife. I felt the same way about Larry Craig's wife, Mark Foley's wife. Oh, wait a minute, not Mark Foley's wife. I don't know what I was thinking. And now Mark Spitzer's wife. The look on that poor woman's face. Why? Why didn't he face the public on his own and not drag her up there? She aged 20 years overnight. And I have to tell you the truth. If I'm pissed about anything concerning Spitzer, it's the exploitation of his wife. Terrible. Really, really terrible. I don't know. Politicians. Who knows? Politicians. Do want to remind everybody that next week we'll be in the show, doing the show Monday and Tuesday from the annual Campaign for America's Future Take Back America conference that's taking place in Washington, D.C. at the Omni Shoreham. We're going to be there Monday and Tuesday with the show. Ah, yes. Next Sunday evening I'll be eating dinner at one of my favorite places, a little bookstore on Connecticut Avenue. Ah, yes, a bookstore. You walk through this bookstore, quaint bookstore on Connecticut Avenue, and then you get in the back of the bookstore, and it turns into a nice little restaurant. Really, really great eclectic-style menu, good food. Just a nice place to go. Nice place to take somebody to dinner. Yeah, great. Not expensive either. That's the best part in Washington, D.C. Anyway, we'll be doing the show next Monday and Tuesday. Normally, we're not on a Monday, but we will be this coming week, Monday and Tuesday, 3 to 5, coming to you from the Omni Shoreham, the Take Back America Conference. Anybody who is anybody as a Democrat is going to be there. We hope to have some great interviews for you. It should be good. I listened to the Ranker going back and forth. I watched a little bit of the House of Representatives today on C-SPAN, and I see that The Republicans are pissed about this, and the Democrats are pissed about that. Don't have your hopes up about the new president, whether it be Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, whichever one it happens to be. Forget McCain. He didn't have a chance in hell of becoming president. But whether it's Barack or it's Hillary, don't get excited about some sort of new attitude in Washington, D.C., because I think it's absolutely clear, and I see the evidence coming from the Capitol building on C-SPAN and every place you look, both from the House and the Senate, that this party bickering is just not going to stop anytime soon. I think if anything, it's going to get worse. If no matter which one of them gets elected, if Barack thinks he's going to take over as president and there's going to be all milk and honey and flowers everywhere coming from the Republicans, hey, get over it, Barack. It's not going to happen. And if Hillary becomes president, you know how much they hate her. So it's not going to happen there either. We're going to continue to have this split down the middle. We're going to continue to have these fights. We're going to continue to have both parties fighting tooth and nail against one another and not getting things done for the American people that really ought to get done. That is what it's going to be. So for anybody that's got any ideas that there's going to be a new attitude in Washington, D.C. when we get a new president, forget it. And I'm talking especially to the Barack Obama people, okay? Don't get me wrong. I'm not endorsing either of these candidates, but do get the notion out of your head that if your candidate gets elected, that there's going to be this coalescing of both the parties. You're going to get together and they're going to work together and it's all going to be so nice. It's not. So I'm just cautioning you. Do not be disappointed when that happens. Barack very well might be our next president. If he does, man, I'm 100% behind him. And if Hillary's the next president, I'm 100% behind her too. Do I like the tactics both parties, or both of them are using here and there? And all? No, I do not. Do I think it's just some travesty and it's the worst, dirtiest campaign ever? Oh, get over it. It is not. Do I think the Hillary campaign is racist? Absolutely not. The Clintons don't have a racist bone in their bodies. Forget that. It is not true. It's something the press is dreaming up. You know, both of these people are running the kind of campaigns they ought to run, throwing little jabs and so forth. There's things that come up that I don't approve of. I didn't approve of Hillary Clinton saying that she and McCain were qualified to be president, and I don't know if she specifically said, and Barack is not. She just said that they were qualified. Yeah, that wasn't real smart. And the Ferraro thing wasn't smart, and the monster thing wasn't smart. And so let's just get back to basics. These people are so close on real issues. Let's not let the press take advantage of the situation and blow everything all out of proportion. Let's hang in there. We're going to have a liberal Democrat president. This much we know. So, hang in there, okay? And how about the Fed printing up an extra $200 billion for Wall Street yesterday? Here you go. Here's $200 billion. Have a good time, guys. Let's watch the market roll. And so it goes up, what, 416 points yesterday? Really, that's what it amounted to. The Fed's going to print an extra $200 billion for Wall Street so that the fat cats that got their money in the market don't lose their asses. It's not going to help interest rates for you and I. It's not going to help credit for you and I. It's not going to help with your house payment. It's not going to help stop foreclosures. It's not going to help the dollar from falling. It's not going to help any of that stuff, but it will help the fat cats on Wall Street. Mark my word, that's who that $200 billion went to yesterday. We're going to have inflation up the yin-yang. Because the Fed's going to cut the base rate, the base points again, coming up one. Next Tuesday, is it? I forget. And then over the weekend, we've got our president, who's demonstrated wisdom and good judgment time and again, and he's vetoed legislation that would keep the CIA from waterboarding suspected terrorists. I'm going to talk about this with some guests coming up. Ray McGovern coming up in a few minutes. I said suspected terrorists because one does wonder how many innocents have been subjected to this disgusting, arcane, medieval way of interrogating those the CIA thinks might be involved in terrorist activities. And we got plenty of evidence to show that it doesn't work. And so Junior Bush has the temerity to stand and tell us that this bill would, and to quote him, harm the government's ability to prevent future attacks, end quote. Most anyone, and we'll have someone on later that really knows about it, most anyone who knows about anything at all about interrogation techniques knows full well that waterboarding is not a method by which reliable information can be collected. To say nothing of the fact that our country's moral standing abroad is being totally trashed by this president and his henchmen. His administration holds that this bill would take away one of, and let's quote him again, one of the most valuable tools on the war on terror, end quote. I would ask why they haven't included thumb screws and pulling people's fingernails out and drilling their teeth and maybe even a little boiling water for good measure to extract the truth from suspects. Oh, and don't forget the medieval rack and some of the other methods of the Grand Inquisitors. And let's not forget all of those methods were also used to protect people. This bill that Bush vetoed would have restricted the CIA to using only 19 interrogation techniques listed in the Army Field Manual. I guess 19 just isn't enough. President Bush's veto will be one of the most shameful acts of his presidency, said Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts in a statement Friday. He said, unless Congress overrides the veto, it'll go down in history as a flagrant insult to the rule of law and a serious stain on the good name of America in the eyes of the world, end quote. And as I mentioned, even the Army Field Manual contends that harsh interrogation is a, quote, poor technique that yields unreliable results, may damage subsequent collection efforts, and can induce the source to say what he thinks the interrogator wants to hear, end quote. But then, compared to the grand and infinite wisdom displayed by Junior Bush during the past 7 years, what does the Army know? After all, they've only been involved in prisoner interrogation for 232 years, and obviously Bush's judgment would take precedent over that bunch of rookies. As usual, Junior Bush knows it all. We have the National Intelligence Estimate recently talking about Iran and their nuclear efforts. And we have Bush going overseas and talking to people in the Middle East. Well, never mind what the NIE says. I have other information. Yeah. He always knows better, doesn't he? We have the entire intelligence community of the United States of America coming out with that National Intelligence Agency, coming out with that NIE report. And we've got Junior Bush, dumb SOB that he is, overseas, telling everybody, well, never mind what that says. Me and Dick, we got other information. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Going to pause for a quick break. Be right back.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Ah, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shear's Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here on the Horn Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have you with us this afternoon. If you want to join the program, give us a call. Toll free. Really not painful at all. You just pick up the phone, dial 866-546-5254. It'll be all right, really. I'll be real gentle with you. Yeah. Oh my, lots to talk about. Coming up in about 9 minutes or so, we're gonna have Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, on with us. I always love having Ray on. Ray's the kind of guy you like to sit down with on an afternoon at an outdoor cafe and pick his brain. He knows a lot. Hey, I did want to mention one thing. You know, we've been talking about this resignation of Elliot Spitzer, the resignation we really should be worried about right now. And it does most certainly worry me. The one we really need to worry about is the resignation. And I say resignation with great reservation because the man was simply forced out. That's all there is to it. Of CENTCOM Commander Admiral William Fallon. He announced his resignation. And yesterday, and since Fallon made it clear last year that no military action against Iran would occur, and he said on his watch, if I were you, my friends, I'd start being very, very afraid of that whole thing. Forget the hookers. That's been the number one story. Forget John Sidney McCain, who never saw a country he didn't want to bomb. He might get his wish for the proverbial October surprise, and we might as well get ready for gasoline so expensive you'll have to sign a note at the pump. They'll have a guy sitting there with a little booth, and you can sign a promissory note when you buy gas. They offer us John Sidney McCain, a war hawk. A guy that's frothing at the mouth to bomb Iran. Even come up with a little song about it. Remember that? Bomb, 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 bomb Iran. Mm-hmm. A man who talks that way, believe me, has got no business. No business running for the presidency of the United States. And if I were the Democratic political strategist, I would make sure that video, and I've got it, and you've got it, and a lot of people have it, the audio, video, whatever, I'd make sure that was on every ad that I played for no matter where in the country, I would put that on as a tag. That picture of John McCain singing, John Sidney McCain singing, bomb, 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 Iran. Because he meant it. And like I said, that was the most important resignation, not Elliot Spitzer. New York will continue to run just fine without Elliot Spitzer. America will not continue to run just fine, as if it were at the moment, with John Sidney McCain as the President of the United States. And also, all of this talk we've been doing all week long about this, that, and the other thing, really the most important statistic that we could talk about this week was that yesterday? Eight U.S. soldiers were killed in Baghdad. Eight. That surge is working out really well. Really well. We hear about the corruption, that a lot of the money's being diverted to the Shia and Sunni militias. We had, what, 42 Iraqi citizens killed yesterday? We have no idea as to a victory in Iraq. We have no idea as to when the troops are going to be pulled out of Iraq. We have General Petraeus over there, who is, I guess, the one and only authority. We no longer have, in case you didn't know, we no longer have civilian control of the military in this country. It seems that we've turned it over to the military, that they decide who we invade and who we fight and how long we fight and all that. We no longer have civilian control of it. Bush has turned it over to General Petraeus. I guess Bush didn't know the proper protocol for all that. You see, Junior, it's always been, and I know you don't know this because I know you probably never opened a goddamn book in your life, especially a history book. Here's a man completely ignorant of history, running the presidency of the United States, and he turns over the military decisions. He turns over decisions on what we're going to do in Iraq to the military. That isn't the way it works, Junior. That's not how it works. The military is there to do the bidding of the civilian control, of the executive branch, of the legislative branch. That's how it works. You go to the legislative branch, you tell them what it is you need to do, and then when it's decided what we should do, and God help us, it should usually be a wise decision. Then, Junior, then we go to the military, and then we say, this is what we want to do. Now, you can decide the tactical end of it, and you should. But we will decide when it starts, when it ends, and all the political ramifications of it. But, Junior, you see, he missed that part somewhere in his studies in high school, if he ever studied in high school. Eight soldiers. We're getting awful damn close to another watermark, aren't we? Getting awfully close to 4,000. Pathetic. Just pathetic. Are we any closer to ending this than we were last year at this time? Not one bit. Not one bit. We're still torturing people, though. Ha ha. It's good to know, doesn't it? Doesn't that warm the cockles of your heart, knowing that our people are torturing? Yes. And we're going to talk about it when we come back from the break. We're going to pause for a break. We're going to get one of our guests on the phone, Ray McGovern, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. Don't go away.
Cherish is a word I use to describe all the feeling that I have fighting here for you inside. You don't know how many times I've wished that I had told you. You don't know how many times I've wished that I could hold you. Don't know how many times I wish that I could mold you into someone who could cherish me as much as I cherish you. Perish is a word that more than applies to the hope in my heart each time I realize share your dreams, that I am not gonna be the one to share your schemes, that I am not gonna be the one to share what seems to be the life that you could cherish as much as I do yours. Well, I'm beginning to think that man has never found the words that could make you what made, that have the right
random round of letters, just the right sound that could make you hear, make you see that you are driving me out of my mind. Oh, I could say I need you, but then you'd realize that I want you, just like a thousand other guys would say they love you. With all the rest of their lives, when all they wanted was to touch your face, your hands, and gaze into your eyes. Cherish is a word I use to describe all the feeling that I have writing here for you inside. Cherish me as much as I cherish you, and I do cherish you.
And we're back. Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. So good to have all of you along with us. And as promised right now, we have on the line with us Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst. Ray, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Guy.
Everybody grab a cup of coffee, and I think that's what Ray just did.
Exactly.
Did you run out to Starbucks or...
No, into the kitchen.
Thanks so much for being with us today, Ray. We appreciate it very much. I know we can always rely on you for the straight dope, as it were, on what's going on in Washington regarding some of these things. You and I spoke during the break there for a moment. We originally had not planned on talking about this, but since it's happened, it's really important, this resignation of Admiral Fallon. Just how important is that to what's going on in the world stage right now?
Well, Guy, you know, as strange as it may seem, despite the announcement that Iran has halted work on its nuclear weapons-related program, the president has disavowed that, saying he has a different opinion. And it looks very much like Cheney, the president, and people like Elliot Abrams have not given up on the notion of doing something to the Iranian nuclear facilities before the President Cheney leave office.
Ray, can I interrupt you a moment?
You
mentioned that, and I've heard Bush say this, and I know he said it while he was visiting the Middle East, that he has a different opinion.
Right.
All of our intelligence agencies, I forget how many there were, 17 or something like that, they've all come together with this NIE. Where would Bush get a different opinion?
From the avuncular Mr. Cheney.
Oh, that's comforting.
Yeah. And from Olmert.
Mm.
You know, the Israelis have been singing the tune that a nuclear capability is just around the corner. Neocons like Jim Woolsey, who, I hate to say it, but used to be the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, but now styles himself as the head of the Presbyterian wing of JINSA, the Jewish International National Security Institute. So you're getting a lot of the same neocons that persuaded Bush to attack Iraq, now advising him to attack Iran. The point about Fallon, the thing that really has me alarmed, and I mean alarmed, is that not only I, but many people have been saying for months now that the only thing that has prevented so far Bush and Cheney from either launching something against Iran or winking at Israel while it launched something against Iran has been the very fierce opposition on the part of the senior military leadership of this country. Finally, some of them are shown courage. And Fallon, of course, was first and foremost among this. Fallon told my colleague, Patrick Lang, one of our veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity, months ago, "We're not going to do Iran on my watch, okay? Now, I asked Pat, I said, Pat, what do you think he meant by that? And Pat said, well, I think what he meant is that if he sensed that he was going to be asked to order what would equivalently be World War III or at least a major regional war in the Middle East, which we could not possibly, quote, win, end quote, he would put his name on top of the retirement list. Now, that's what he's done. That's what he did yesterday. And it bothers me greatly to think that one of the staunchest and one of the most intelligent military strategists has seen fit to leave the scene rather than risk being mousetrapped into ordering a major attack on Iran. You see, Guy, this is kind of necessary to say, but the way I piece things together, the United States of America no longer holds the initiative there. The initiative is held by Olmert and the high-risk Israeli officials who look at the calendar and say, whoops, Cheney and Bush aren't going to be around but 9-10 months more. If we're going to get them to do something about Iran, now's the time, because come January of 2009, and curiously enough, the Israeli ambassador to the United States has actually said this, come January of 2009, the Iranians will have the idea that they get away with a lot of things. So we have to move now. Why? Because Iran's close to a nuclear capability? Forget it. They're 5 years away. They've been 5 years away, the intelligence community has been saying, every year for about 15 years. No, the time element has to do with the tenure of Cheney and Elliot Abrams and Bush. And there's where the initiative lies. And if the Israelis decide, well, they're going to do the same thing they did to the Iraqi nation's nuclear capability in Osirak in 1981, they'll go to Cheney and Abrams and get a wink and a nod. And the first thing you know, there will be U.S.-built Israeli planes wreaking havoc on some, but can't do it all, some of the Iranian facilities, in which case the Iranians would be compelled to retaliate, and then we would be in it big. Because we have a mutual defense pact with Israel? No, we don't have one. But Bush talks as though we do have one, and our Congress, anytime Israel is involved, well, you know that the vote is 400-1 with 3 non-voters. So there's none of the normal restraints on a president here, and this president is very, very risk-averse, but risk-prone. So to see Fallon leave disturbs me greatly and enhances the chances, as I see them, better than 50%, that there will be some sort of strike on Iran, and I think the way it would likely happen would be that the Israelis would move first.
Ray, for the benefit of our audience, and we hear questions about this all the time, but I know you have a great insight into it. Why, with the military capability that Israel has, surely they are not threatened by Iran militarily. Surely they could fight their own battle with no problem against Iran. Why are we in this position?
I've puzzled about this a lot, and I try to put myself in the place of a normal Israeli citizen or even an official, and as I look at the history, going back to just my lifetime, back to the 30s and 40s, never again. Well, one has to remember that before the war, before the Second World War, boats full of Jewish people from Germany and elsewhere in Europe set forth for our shores, and what happened? They were turned away. Turned away. Why? Because they didn't have visas, And that really is part of the consciousness, the memory of the people who now live in Israel. Their conclusion, we can't trust anyone. We can't trust anyone, not even the United States. So that's, I think, part of their world outlook. And then as they look at Iran, they see what they call to be, quote, an existential threat, end quote. Well, with 200 or 300 nuclear weapons of their own, it's hard logically to believe that they really see that as an existential threat. But you know what? I think some of them do. I think some of them do, and I think part of it has to do with the fact that this would really alter the strategic equation, because there is such a thing as deterrence, and once Iran got a nuclear weapon, the Israeli leaders would not feel quite as free to do the kinds of things they're doing in Gaza and the West Bank today. That is a new situation, and the last point I would make is that, you know, there has been the traditional immigration into Israel from Jews from all over the world. Well, guess what's happening? Guess what's happening? There are more people leaving Israel now because of this perceived danger than going in. And that, in a real sense, can be looked upon as an existential threat. Now, none of this is said to condone or to bless or even to say that this is logical thinking. But I think, you know, an analyst really has to try his or her best to put themselves in the shoes of others and give them the benefit of the doubt and say, well, you know, there's a perceptible portion of the Israeli population that do or have been convinced or have been propagandized to think that if Iran got one nuclear weapon, that would be indeed an existential threat to Israel.
Well, not a pleasant thought. Not a pleasant thought at all. Switching gears here a little bit, Ray, we wanted to talk about Bush's veto of this bill over the weekend and how he got on and bragged about it. It was something that was taking away a lot of our protection. And, you know, we had a gentleman, all of a sudden his name escapes me, Dr. Justin Frank. We had Dr. Justin Frank on the program, I don't know, maybe a year ago. And I think he's, I'm talking off the top of my head now, I think he's a professor at George Washington University. But
He is at the medical school there. He's a psychiatrist.
And he wrote that book, Bush on the Couch. In fact, I'm looking at it on my bookshelf right now.
Mm-hmm.
He talked in it about George Bush maybe believing what made him be so dangerous is that he actually believes, he thinks, a lot of what he says when he lies, that he does believe it's the truth, which makes him extra dangerous. He does, I think, in my opinion, believe what he's saying about the torture, about wanting to reserve the right to torture. And, well, he never says torture, but waterboard and so forth. What do you think?
Well, I'd make 3 points here. First off, everyone who has any expertise in interrogation techniques has come to the same conclusion that the head of Army Intelligence did. Very gutsy guy, by the way. His name is Lieutenant General John Kimmins. On the 6th of September 2006, at the Pentagon at noon, he got up and, announcing the new Army Manual for Interrogation, said this, and I quote, "No good intelligence is going to come from abusive practices. I think history tells us that. I think the empirical evidence of the last 5 years, hard years, tells us that, period," end quote. Now, why was that so gutsy? Because less than 2 hours later, Kimmins knew darn well that the President of the United States was going to get up on the other side of the Potomac and brag about the wonderful effects of using harsh interrogation techniques, the President would say, an alternative set of procedures. Now, as I say, going in, if you look at it from a practical or for an efficiency kind of point of view, it doesn't work. Torture doesn't work. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, has no one told Bush that? Well, of course they have. Of course they have. So the next question is, why does he insist on it? And I see three reasons. The first is, no good intelligence is going to come from abusive practices. Well, hey, if you're not after good intelligence, if you're after the kind of intelligence that Bush can get up before the people of this country and say, we know from an al-Qaeda operative that Saddam Hussein has given training to al-Qaeda in chemical and biological weapons. If you want to be able to say that, well, you capture somebody. In this case, it was Sheikh Alibi. He was given to the Egyptians for interrogation techniques. He, quote, confessed, end quote, to this reality that Saddam Hussein was training al-Qaeda in chemical and biological weapons, And the President of the United States got up on the 7th of October 2002, told the nation this tall tale 3 days before Congress voted to give him the power for war. So, hey, if you're after bad intelligence, this is the way to do it.
And didn't we find out just in the past couple of days that they've gone through I don't know how many thousand pages of documents from Iraq, of Hussein's files and so forth, and found out there's absolutely no evidence to point to any association with al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein whatsoever?
That's exactly right. And, of course, al-Libi, as soon as he got free, said, hey, they tortured me in Egypt. I didn't mean anything I said. It was all made up so that to stop the torture. Now, the second reason goes back to Justin Frank, Dr. Frank being the gentleman, the psychiatrist that you mentioned, who teaches at George Washington University Medical School here in Washington. Now, he collaborated with us, with veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity, on a major piece last summer. And in that piece, he pointed out a bunch of things, and one has to do, can you handle the truth on this, listeners? One has to do with the sadistic tendencies exhibited by our president from his early childhood through his governorship of Texas. Let's just take one. When he was a senior in college at Yale, he would take white-hot coat hangers and sizzle the skin on the buttocks of naked 18-year-old freshmen and love it. He'd laugh. When he was interviewed by the New York Times that fall, the fall of 1967, because his father had a big name and because one of the kids complained, he said, "What's the big deal? It's only a cigarette burn."
Mm.
Now, that's pure sadism,
yeah.
Justin Frank comments. He even denies its seriousness. But when you think about it for a second, who goes around burning people with cigarettes? And this is all very well documented. As I say, he was interviewed by the New York Times, and he crowed about it. So that's number two. The other one, I'd simply say, is that traditionally, over the centuries, torture has been used to intimidate populations. And when you look at what has happened in this country with Jose Padilla and other American citizens tortured, and that's well documented. The message is, you know, Guy James, Ray McGovern, listeners, you know, this could happen to you. So just be a little careful here, because we know we're listening to your conversations. Just be aware, guys, that this could happen to you. So those are the three reasons. If you want bad information, hey, torture's a great way to do it. If you want to intimidate people, sometimes it works. And the other part is that apparently Bush takes a perverse delight in doing this kind of thing.
Well, that's a bit troubling for the most powerful man in the world to talk about that. And here we have another troubling aspect of all this. We have John Sidney McCain running for the presidency and changing his position on torture. It's so hard for me to understand how anybody that had gone through torture for several years, it's very difficult to understand how you could now sanction it in the name of the American flag. I'm having a really hard time with that one.
Well, I am too, Guy. I just I'm terribly disappointed. You know, he made a big name for himself in the fall of 05 when he sponsored the so-called McCain Amendment, which was designed to prevent torture, which was designed to make everyone adhere to the guidelines in the new Army Manual for Interrogation. And he crowed about having achieved that purpose, but when the president signed that, he added a signing statement saying, "None of the above can be construed as impinging upon my powers as commander-in-chief, blah, 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 blah." And so there was a signing statement disavowing any necessity to enforce the law on this. And John McCain, early sign here, John McCain didn't say zero. He didn't say anything, okay? And then, of course, he voted with the president 2 weeks ago on the Senate bill and now has joined the president in saying, "Well, you know, I'm against torture, but, you know, we need to let the CIA torture." You know, it's doublespeak to the nth degree.
Yeah, there shouldn't be no word "but" or "however" after torture. There just shouldn't. I It's very disconcerting to everybody that hears about it. It most certainly is that our country. I never thought, and that's one thing I wanted to ask you about. How far back does this go? The CIA involvement in something like this. Are we going back to the Vietnam War? Were these tactics used then, or is this something that's been cooked up since what? Maybe during the Cold War, or when? What's the history of it?
Well, the original training from which the actual education was gotten was a defensive sort of thing against the Soviet Union, North Koreans, and others who were thought to apply these waterboarding and other techniques. Isn't that the height of irony? In other words, that's how we perfected our own application of these techniques. There were abuses all along. There were great abuses in Central America. There were certain abuses in Vietnam, to be sure. But never, Guy, never has it been a matter of public policy. Public policy in this country to condone whatever you want to call them, abusive or harsh interrogation techniques or an alternate set of procedures. We all know what it is. It's waterboarding. It's the kind of techniques that leave no marks, okay? You can waterboard something and someone, and if they claim to have been waterboarded, well, prove it. You don't have any marks on your body. It's this kind of thing, and it's really so reprehensible that our country has descended to that. Where are the, where are the people that claim moral authority in our country? I mean, it's not a stretch to refer back to the 30s in Germany, where the Catholic Church or the Evangelical Lutheran Church could not find their voice in speaking out against the deportation of Jews, against all the injustices that were happening then. And if you look around today, look at the institutional churches, they cannot find their voice. And so it's really all up to us,
Now, there is no great outcry coming from the religious community, and that's troubling as well. Anything in the name of the flag goes now, God and country, and let's all wear our American flag pins. Call ourselves patriots and good Americans, and yet where are 60 senators? 60. That's all we need out of 100 to override this veto, and we're not going to come close, are we?
No, it doesn't look like we will. Actually, the House failed yesterday, so it doesn't look like that. What will be interesting now is, the Defense Appropriation Bill is pretty important. How are they going to strip it of this provision? Are the Democrats going to play patsy again and say, oh, well, we need a strong defense? Or are they going to stand up? And, I may be Pollyanna, but the Democrats did stand up on the eavesdropping bill, on giving AT&T, Verizon, and others immunity post facto for violating our constitutional rights under the Fourth Amendment to privacy. So there's some chance, there's some chance that there'll be a sort of a transplant of backbone into Nancy Pelosi and others. Will they say, no, this is enough. We're not going to go any farther. Torture is beyond the pale. We want the president to know that, and we're going to sabotage this attempt to justify it.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, regarding Nancy Pelosi, I know that she had mentioned that when she was the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, when Bush and Cheney took office, that she'd been apprised of the situation and told about this. But then she certainly seemed to not know anything about the surveillance and all that afterwards. I don't know. I seem to be getting the wrong story from Nancy Pelosi on all this.
Well, she bragged 2 years ago about having the longest tenure on the House Intelligence Committee, and she still is ex officio a member of that committee, okay? She was briefed on this stuff, not only the eavesdropping, but on the torture. Now, she didn't say anything then, and so it's highly embarrassing for her to be challenging people now. She is compromised, and, if she thought she could get away with saying, well, I didn't know it, well, guess what? Guess what? NSA has records of all our conversations and can show that she not only was fully briefed, but that she acquiesced in these practices. So that's why it's very important that the law against eavesdropping on Americans be adhered to. That's what, that's what J. Edgar Hoover used to do. That's why they passed the law in 1978 against this kind of thing. So, Guy, we're really at a crossroads here. we're really at a crossroads with respect to our civil liberties and with respect to whether the Constitution that our founders worked so hard on and gave us the proper remedy for this situation. It's called impeachment, you know? It's called impeachment. We do not blanch before the word. It's an orderly political process, and it needs to be implemented now. And for the Democrats to be, you know, giving priority to what they see as the possible benefits of during the election of November, if they don't make any waves now, you know, if they don't cause any image of divisiveness that Fox News could play up and say, oh, these Democrats are really terrible people, they're trying to impeach our president. If the Democrats can't rise above that, well, I fear for the future of our nation. I really do.
Well, I do as well. And here we are. We had the New York mess yesterday and today, and we had their New York government talking about impeachment within 24 hours of something had happened over a sexual liaison, and yet with the crimes that we pulled off by the presidency here in this country, we dare not even talk about it.
Well, Ryan, you know, I was invited to participate in a panel in New York on Sunday. It was a town hall impeachment discussion to which Jerry Nadler, the head, that is the chair of the subcommittee on the Constitution of the House Judiciary Committee. And the subject was, you know, is impeachment necessary to protect our Constitution? I was not able to go, but I did give a statement. And as I looked at what I might say about the articles of impeachment that have sat in Jerry Nadler's inbox since November, okay, since November, impeachment against Cheney, I recalled that, looked at some notes, and I said, well, you know, this is the fellow. This is the fellow that on August 26th, 2002, said Saddam Hussein has, we know that he has restarted work on his nuclear capability. We think he could get a nuclear weapon sooner rather than later, and he has all manners of other weapons of mass destruction. Now, that was a lie then, but we didn't know the full of it. Now we know because George Tenet, the head of the CIA, has written a book of all things, and what Tenet says is, the evidence available to me at the CIA did not support that. That was a big surprise to me. Cheney usually let us see his speeches before he said that. He didn't this time. And you know what, says Tenet, I have the impression that the President of the United States didn't know what he was going to say either. Well, the next 45 days were the mushroom cloud days. Do you remember?
Sure.
Mushroom cloud.
Yes.
And during those 45 days, our Congress was really tricked out of its constitutional prerogative to declare or otherwise authorize war. And so 45 days after that speech, with lots of help from George Tenet and others, composing and fabricating things to the terms of reference of Cheney, the Congress voted overwhelmingly to give the president the power to start what can only be called, what Nuremberg called, a war of aggression, the supreme international crime.
Certainly. Ray, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. As always, it's good to hear your very educated views on this and experienced views. Thanks so much, and from all the listeners here at the Guy James Show, we're very appreciative of you being on the program.
You're most welcome, Guy.
Thank you.
There, Rangers. When you mosey into Rick's place, you never know what you're going to get.
I had a conversation with one of my right-wing Democrat friends. One thing this person told me was that I'm mean, so I'm going to try to change.
Oh, Rick, you're not mean. You're just passionate in a very spirited sort of way.
I've done it. I went through an entire show without one single insult.
Rick, we know better.
Mr. and Mrs. Republican, you are no good. You are a lying fool. You're a lying fool, a crook, a crooked crook, a babbling moron, juggling the truth, a goon, a nick and pick and whiny rat. An Uncle Sam can't do anything right. And when it comes to sex, you are also uptight. Free pig, monster, and a beast. You're a killer.
Republican side!
Don't miss Rick's Place with Rick Goodner, part of the weekend lineup on the horn. Running all weekend in rotation with the Sowards Report and Night Sounds.
They suck like crazy, but not in a good way. They suck!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Thanks for being with us today. As promised, we were going to talk a lot today about this problem with torture and the CIA and the Bush veto over the weekend and all. And we have with us now, at least I hope we do, Sam Provence. Thank you for being on the program today.
Oh, thank you.
Sam is, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a former sergeant, and you were in the business of intelligence, were you not?
Yes, that's right. I was a intelligence analyst, but when I was at Abu Ghraib, I was a systems administrator, or as commonly known as a computer guy.
Okay. Have you knowledge of these enhanced interrogation procedures?
Could you repeat that?
Do you have knowledge of the enhanced interrogation procedures that they're talking about, that Bush is talking about, saying is so important to our national security?
Correct.
How important are they? Do they work? Bush says we've got to be able to do these things or we can't maintain our security. What do you have to say about that?
I would say that they don't work. For everything that they did at Abu Ghraib, all the trouble they went through and all the things they practiced there, nothing ever productive came out of any of it. And what we were left with is this scandal.
Why don't they work? You would think the people watch the movies, and they say, well, they torture somebody and they tell them anything they want to know. What kind of information do we really get from waterboarding people and that sort of thing?
In most cases, I would say you would get a forced confession, which some would argue is used to help shape intelligence that the interrogator is looking for from the subject before, he's even walked inside the interrogation booth. I know that was going on at Abu Ghraib because, there's so much pressure coming from, your boss and, to produce a product that has to be sent up from, one boss to another boss. And then when I was at Abu Ghraib, they actually instituted a quota system so that at the end of the day, no matter what happened, they had to have a good product.
Oh, that's frightening, knowing a quota system. I mean, there's either information there or there isn't. And let me ask you, when they recruit people to do this sort of work, do they look for a certain psychological profile, or is this something that just anybody gets involved in and has orders to do it and they do it?
Well, from my experience, it was something that was thrust upon soldiers. I mean, they wanted me to do it. They wanted me to be on one of these teams, and the only thing that saved me was the fact that I had the responsibility of running the computer network. A lot of the soldiers that got there, they weren't even trained interrogators from the conventional schoolhouse. They were just affiliated with military intelligence, and because they needed the people to fill the role, they were giving them like a crash course PowerPoint presentation on how to be an interrogator, and then, you know, sending them into the booth.
Wouldn't this be something that a lot of people wouldn't be able to do?
Well, that's right, and a lot of them couldn't do it, and so they would reduce them into a role of being such things as security for the interrogation.
And how about the effects of people who do this? Do they come out of this as damaged goods, or are they just hardcore in the first place?
Do you mean the people that they're talking to?
No, the people, the interrogators. They're given a crash course to learn how to do this and so forth. When they come out of this, are they different people? Are they dangerous people?
Oh, absolutely. I would imagine it would be, you know, relevant to the person, but, you know, from the people I knew, it completely changed their attitude and their personality. The saddest examples were, you know, those that were young soldiers, you know, still teenagers, and, you know, having to do these things and not just, you know, doing them, but, you know, after a while it became, you know, because for them and from their perspective, it all became kind of like a game or, you know, worst case, a joke. You know, it was like, you know, when they would discuss these things, it wasn't done professionally. It was done very humorously. And, you know, it became a very, very dark situation.
Really hard for the layman to even understand how somebody could do it. And it's also, it would seem to me that people would suffer psychological damage for probably the rest of their lives having that to think about, that they'd participated in that.
The thing is, they're told, you know, that they're saving lives by doing these things. You know, that's what kind of makes it diabolical, in my opinion, because
yes,
they feel that what they're doing is something righteous.
Oh.
And the worst part about it, in my opinion, was that the majority of these people that had to undergo these processes were completely innocent.
Well, what's the effects of that? I mean, certainly this isn't a secret in Iraq anymore that we've been doing this and have done this. What's the overall effect of it on the Iraqi people?
Well, we're creating enemies that we never had. I know at Abu Ghraib, the focus of the intelligence shifted from the big picture, you know, Operation Iraqi Freedom, to who's helping the insurgency outside this facility. You know, the minute people would escape or be released, there'd be a sudden increase in attacks.
So the overall effect of this, we've just got more enemies rather than any useful information to keep us from having fewer enemies.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know what the answer is. I know Bush vetoed this bill, and I wanted to ask you one thing. I know the Army manual says that they have, what is it, 19 other methods? How severe are the 19 methods?
Well, I know a lot of the language is vague. I'm not sure about today's manual, but I know what Abu Ghraib, you know, they have what's called approaches and conditions, and they use terminology such as dietary manipulation, or, you know, or environmental manipulation, and that can be interpreted, you know, all sorts of ways.
I've also heard about threats to their families and you know, things like
that. Oh, yeah. I mean, ideally it's supposed to be a chess match, you know, between the interrogator and the interrogated, and, you know, there's different, you know, kind of mind games that can play, but, you know, it's not designed to, you know, to break them in half, you know, to send them into some kind of a psychosis before you can get anything out of them. You know, in the past, what's always been known to be the most successful is, you know, building rapport with the prisoner, getting him to realize that for him the war is over, so that he stops resisting. And, you know, just even knowing their name or recognizing, you know, that they're there, showing them the least bit of care, you know, goes to great lengths to getting them to just sitting down and just basically getting them to tell their story.
And I've heard the reason I brought up the family thing, I've heard that one of the most important things that that you could tell them, if you could convince them that their families would be safe and their families would not be harmed, that you could elicit a great deal of cooperation just from that.
Oh, I'm sure. But unfortunately, as I knew from Abu Ghraib, you know, they were doing the opposite. You know, they were threatening to have their wife or other women in their family raped, you know, by soldiers. Or in one case I knew, you know, they actually took a son and got, you know, and abused him to get the father to talk. And, you know, and it, you know, one MP told me that that was common practice. And, you know, that's never going to produce something good.
Well, Sam, when you went in the United States Army and you raised your hand and you swore your oath, this is something you didn't bargain for, did you?
Absolutely not.
It's just a shame that anybody wearing the uniform of the United States of America has to be subjected to this and asked to do this. And what you said about being diabolical, about convincing them that it's saving lives and so forth, that's probably the worst part of all, that it's a big lie. Sam, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It's very, very interesting to hear your views, and I appreciate it very much, as do our listeners.
Well, thank you.
Thanks very much. Well, there you have it from a gentleman that was there at Abu Ghraib, knows about this sort of thing. The sickening. It's sickening to hear that. And you could just about tell from his voice that he feels that way as well. And to raise your hand and swear an oath of allegiance to the United States military and then be asked to do something like that by your superior officers is disgusting, to say the least. Absolutely disgusting. Feel bad for anybody that had to be involved in that whatsoever. And the sad part is, folks, sad part is we're not talking about something in the past. We're talking about something that's going to continue on. Junior Bush has made sure of that. We will not have 60 senators with guts enough to overturn the veto. And so this policy of torture, and you can call it an enhanced interrogation, you can call it anything you please, but it is torture. And I would defy every one of those senators that voted to allow this, and every one of the House members that voted to allow this, and Bush and Cheney and everybody else that had anything to do it. Let's just all line them up and let's just do it to them. Let's see how they vote then. Let's see if they think it's humane treatment. Let's see if they think it's something people representing the flag of the United States of America, once known as the greatest, most moral country on this earth. Let's see if any of them would stand for it themselves. Then let's see if it's something that people representing our flag ought to be involved in. I would bet you, I don't know this for a fact, but if we took a vote amongst the citizens of this country and asked them whether we ought to be doing this under any circumstances, I would say the overwhelming majority of the people in this country would say no, absolutely not, not in my name. That is why it is a shame that this impeachment thing never got off the, you know, never got rolling. That's the shame of it all, that we have criminals running this country, and we were afraid, we were intimidated, whatever it was, we never did anything about it. That was the shame of it all. Not in my name. We're going to take a minute and pause for news. We skipped it at the top of the hour because of the way we had guests scheduled, and we'll take the news right now, and we'll be right back. Okay.
This news brief brought to you by the International News Net. U.S. research has found evidence linking chronic health problems suffered by Gulf War veterans to exposure to pesticides and nerve agents. One-third of veterans of the 1991 war experienced fatigue, muscle or joint pain, sleeping problems, rashes, and breathing troubles. The U.S. government refuses to recognize the Gulf War syndrome.
Oil prices topped $109 a barrel for the first time Tuesday. Oil's latest rise will likely be underpinned by brisk demand in China and other emerging markets. House Democratic leaders are readying a proposal that would reject giving legal protection to the phone companies who helped in the NSA's program of illegal wiretapping. This week's U.S. News and World Report says there are signs the U.S. is moving toward military action with Iran, beginning with the sudden resignation of Admiral William Fallon, the top U.S. military commander for the Middle East, who criticized George Bush's Iran policy. U.S. News says with the army engaged in Iraq, contingency planning for military action has fallen to the Navy. Another sign is the trip to the Middle East of Hawk Dick Cheney, scheduled to visit Oman, a logistics hub for military operations in the Persian Gulf, and Saudi Arabia, whose support would be sought to increase oil supplies if Iran's were cut off. A third sign is the Israeli airstrike on Syria last October, whose real purpose was to force Syria to switch on its targeting electronics, reducing risks for U.S. warplanes headed to Iran. The Vatican has updated the seven deadly sins by adding seven modern mortal sins it claims are becoming prevalent in an era of unstoppable globalization. Those risking eternal punishment, including drug dealers, the obscenely wealthy, and scientists who manipulate human genes. The new mortal sins were listed by Archbishop Gianfranco Girotti at the end of a week-long training seminar in Rome for priests aimed at encouraging a revival of the practice of confession. Archbishop Girotti said he thought the most dangerous areas for committing new types of sins lay in the fields of bioethics and ecology. Girotti also named abortion and pedophilia as two of the greatest sins of our times. The Archbishop brushed off cases of sexual violence against minors committed by priests as, quote, exaggerations by the mass media aimed at discrediting the church.
Out on the racetrack, a professional driver knows he's surrounded by other pro drivers.
NASCAR legend and racing champion Rusty Wallace.
When you drive a truck for a living, the only professional around might be you. All the more reason to buckle up every trip, every time. Because out on the highway, trouble can come from anywhere, and it can happen in a heartbeat. If you're ever in a crash, the smartest and the safest place for a trucker to be is behind the wheel, secure and in control of your truck, looking out for yourself and everybody around you. Without your safety belt, you could easily get bumped out of position, and that means out of control. Trust me, that's not good on the racetrack. And it's not good on the highway. So be ready. Be buckled. Remember, you're the professional, the one who drives for a living.
A public service message from the U.S. Department of Transportation.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week I formally endorse Senator John McCain for President of the United States in the election that's coming up. Frankly, I think that my endorsement is what's putting him over the top. I mean, if it wasn't for me, I think that these Democrats would be whooping his butt. Well, John came and had hot dogs at the White House with me today, and he stuck around for the weekly radio address. Welcome, Senator McCain.
Thank you, Mr. President.
And I want to assure you, Senator, you got my full support.
Thank you again. I'm fortunate, I feel, to have a great campaign team behind me as well.
Yes, but not as great as the President of the United States standing behind you.
Well, things are going pretty well. I know you're a busy man. I don't want
to
take up your valuable time away from the White House.
There's no problem, John. I'll be with you every stop in your campaign's trail.
Mr. President, I'll
stick to you like glue.
That truly is not necessary, Mr. President. Just knowing we've got your support, that's good enough for me.
No, I insist.
We just have the one microphone on stage and...
I'll stand close. We can share.
Well, our bus is pretty full, Mr. President. I'm not sure if we have an extra seat.
I got Air Force One.
We won't be able to feed you. Along the way, the caterers, they've got a firm count on the rest of the campaign.
Hell, I'll brown bag it.
Mr. President, look, I don't know how I can tell you this more directly, but there's a terrorist standing right behind you at this moment.
Huh? What? Where? What? Hey, that's just a coat rack. Senator McCain, where'd you go to? Well, I better catch up with him. Thank you for listening, American people. God bless.
I think that's the best one of those he's ever had. You got to know that except for the bucks that Bush can raise simply because he's the president of the United States, God, it pains me to say that, that McCain really doesn't want anything to do with him. You know he doesn't. I mean, they may share a lot of views, but McCain also knows it's like having an anchor around his neck. And that's just something that well, who would want to campaign with Junior Bush right now? God. Hey, did you notice that during the news that the Vatican's come up with new sins now? They're inventing new ones as we go. I mean, don't have to invent them. They've always been along, but... Now new mortal sins, and it kills me the way they talk. Pedophilia is now considered a mortal sin. Wasn't it ever? Evidently not. But they want to sweep the one that, you know, they want to sweep the cases of it under the rug involving the church. I find that somewhat humorous. I see John Sidney McCain there talking about Sidney McCain and George Bush and his little. Little skit that he did there. I love that. He is, of course, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. Now, he's all along been an outspoken opponent of torture. Often. And he's talked about his own experience as a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And you all know that story. And however... This is one of those things, there shouldn't be a however in there. After talking about him being tortured and after about him being a prisoner in Vietnam, there shouldn't be any however in there, but there is. In the case of Junior Bush's veto of this bill that McCain originally supported, helped support, he supported Junior Bush's position on this. And he argued that, as Junior did Saturday, that the legislation would have limited the CIA's ability to gather intelligence. Now, we've got one expert after another coming forth and saying the intelligence you get from this is no good. We've had Bush and Cheney and all of them do their scare tactics. Oh, look at all the terrorist plots that we've got information out of here. We've stocked. And we had those... famous, what was it, five guys that over Miami couldn't afford shoes, and we had the guys that were talking about raiding the Army base, where was it, up in New Jersey or North Carolina, I forget where, and of course the famous plot to blow up the Sears Tower, of course they didn't have any money, they didn't have any real plans to do it, but they talked about it at a card game one night. yes. But John Sidney McCain... has changed his mind on all this. And what I'd like to know, changing your mind on this, after being tortured yourself, after spending some years in a rotten, filthy Vietnamese prison, undergoing torture, and seeing the inhumanity from one man to another, wouldn't that be enough for the rest of your life that you would say no to torture under any circumstances whatsoever? And John McCain has up until this point, but now that he needs those on the right on his side, he's got to get those right wingers, all those hardcore right wingers, he's got to get them over there on his side. Well, now torture's okay. Now he says that it would limit the CIA's ability to gather intelligence. And my question to you is this. Is not this statement alone enough to disqualify John Sidney McCain from the presidency in the mind of any thinking American? Anybody that can undergo the torture in himself and revile and see how terrible it is, and now it's okay? I mean, somebody tell me, how is it possible that you could be tortured in a prison camp for several years, abhor torture thereafter for several decades, and then all of a sudden say, well, it's okay now? Is that the kind of judgment you want from a commander-in-chief? Any rational person having undergone torture themselves at the hands of madmen, the only type of person who could perform these indecent acts would be dead set against it in any form whatsoever. John Sidney McCain's sudden departure from his stated stand against torture is a whole hell of a lot more of a problem than a lot of people realize. If he's just lying to curry favor with the radical right, then I might understand. I would like it, but political campaigns being what they are, I wouldn't like it. But knowing how political campaigns work, I might understand it. However, you kind of get the feeling that McCain actually believes that he's seen the light and torture is now acceptable. And that shows me that he's not a leader. That shows me that he's a follower. That shows me that Junior Bush told him what's what, and he's saying, yes, sir, that's what I'll believe from now on. That shows me that he really does have some serious psychological problems. Such a man should not even be in the United States Senate. That's a ugly, ugly thing to say. Let's head on over to the phones here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, I guess not. That was a Washington, D.C. number, so who knows? They'll call back. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call. We are expecting a call from Representative Adam Schiff coming up at, supposed to be at 4:45. Maybe they were calling just a little bit earlier there. I don't know. How do you feel about this Elliot Spitzer thing? Is it a big thing to any of you? Is it really a big deal if yet another politician gets caught up in something like this? Really wasn't to me. Not at all. But I do want to play you something that is a big deal to me. And a couple of things that are big deals to me. And it makes me wonder just how in the world somebody like this gets elected to a national office. This is Representative King. Many of you may have heard this. Representative King from Iowa talking about Barack Obama. I don't know when I've heard a United States representative say anything more reprehensible than this.
I'm going to say something here that I haven't said in the public arena that I think it's time to start thinking about. And that is that I don't want to disparage anyone because of their race, their ethnicity, their name, whatever their religion or their father might have been. I'll just say this, that when you think about the optics of a Barack Obama potentially getting elected president of the United States, and I mean, what does this look like to the rest of the world? What does it look like to the world of Islam? And I will tell you that if he is elected president, then the radical Islamists, the Al-Qaeda and the radical Islamists and their supporters will be dancing in the streets in greater numbers than they did on September 11th, because they will declare victory in this war on terror. They will say the United States has capitulated because we would be pulling our troops out of any conflict that has to do with Al-Qaeda anywhere. And additionally, it does matter. His middle name does matter. It matters because they read a meaning into that in the rest of the world that has special meaning to them. They'll be dancing in the streets because of his middle name. They'll be dancing in the streets because of who his father was and because of his posture that says, pull out of the Middle East and pull out of this conflict. So there are implications that have to do with who he is and the position that he's taken. If he were strong in national defense and said, I'm going to go over there and we're going to fight and we're going to win and we'll come home with a victory, that's different. But that's not what he said. They will be dancing in the streets if he's elected president. And that has a chilling aspect on how difficult it will be to ever win this global war on terror.
The bad thing about that one is the press gave him a chance to even back out of those remarks, and he didn't. He defended them. Actually defended those remarks. You'd think any thinking person might go, well, you know, maybe I screwed up a little bit and I shouldn't have quite said it that way. And another really good piece of audio that came out is this Representative Kern from Oklahoma. What is it in Oklahoma? I'd like to know. They've got a couple of Jim Dandy senators out there. Inhofe is one. He's probably the craziest one in the United States Senate. But this is Representative, I can't think of her name, Kern. And as it said on the website where I ripped off this audio, it said, this is what they say when they think we're not listening.
You know, the very fact that I'm talking to you like this here today puts me in jeopardy. Okay? I'm not gay bashing, but according to God's word, that is not the right kind of lifestyle. It has deadly consequences for those people involved in it. They have more suicides, and they're more discouraged. There's more illness. Their lifespans are shorter. You know, it's not a lifestyle that is good for this nation. Matter of fact, studies show that no society that has totally embraced homosexuality has lasted more than, you know, a few decades. So it's the death knell of this country. I honestly think it's the biggest threat, even that our nation has, even more so than terrorism or Islam, which I think is a big threat. Okay? Because what's happening now, they're going after in schools. Two-year-olds, you know why they're trying to get early childhood education? They want to get our young children into the government schools so they can indoctrinate them. I taught school for close to 20 years, and we're not teaching facts and knowledge anymore, folks. We're teaching indoctrination, okay? And they're going after our young children as young as 2 years of age to try to teach them that the homosexual lifestyle is an acceptable lifestyle. You know, gays are infiltrating city councils. Did you know Eureka Springs? Anybody been there to the Passion Play? Okay, have you heard that the city council of Eureka Springs is now controlled by gays? Okay, there are some others. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Tacoma, Maryland, Kensington, Maryland, in Vermont, Oregon, West Palm Beach, Florida, and a lot of other places in Florida. What's happening? And they are winning elections. One of the things I deal with in our legislature, I tried to introduce a bill last year that would notify parents. Schools had to let parents know what clubs their students were involved in. And the reason I did that bill primarily was this. We have the Gay Straight Alliance coming into our schools. Kids are getting involved in these groups. Their lives are being ruined. Their parents don't know about it. So I introduced a bill that says you have to notify all clubs and things. And one of my colleagues said, you know, we don't have a gay problem in my community. So that's why I voted against that bill. Well, you know what? To me, that is so dumb. If you've got cancer or something in your little toe, do you say, well, you know, I'm just going to forget about it because the rest of it's fine? It spreads. Okay, and this stuff is...
Well, that is quite a conversation from that lady. I think you'll all agree. I don't know when I've heard more offensive comments than that, but to each his own. Like I said, there must be something in the water out there. Right now, it's my honor to introduce to you Representative Adam Schiff from California. And Representative Schiff, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
We were originally scheduled for a little later on, but this will work quite nicely. See, you've got some votes coming up today. What are you handling today on the House floor? I see there was a little bit of rancor going on a little earlier. I had C-SPAN on, and the Republicans were having a little hissy fit over a couple things.
Well, that's true. They objected to the passage of a ethics bill to establish an outside agency to keep an eye on us in Congress instead of having people in Congress do it solely by themselves. And they're unhappy with that. It is a pretty strong bill, but I don't think it should be the cause of all this consternation on the GOP side. We were supposed to take up the budget, but I think as a result of some of the delay tactics, the budget has been pushed off till tomorrow. So we have a couple more consensus bills that are going to come up in the next few minutes, and then we'll be back working on the budget tomorrow.
Okay, we'll understand if you have to run quickly. We wanted to talk today about these contempt citations for Myers and Bolton. Where do we stand on that right now?
Well, unfortunately, it's been necessary for the judiciary and for the Congress to file a suit to enforce the subpoenas. We've been trying to get the information from the administration now for the better part of a year. And this, of course, relates to the firings of these U.S. attorneys around the country that appeared to be very politically motivated, where we were trying to get information from the executive that we have a right to get. We subpoenaed the information, and the administration took the astonishing position that it would not come before Congress to identify what it would claim privilege for and what it would not, but rather it would just fail to show up. It would just completely blow off and show contempt for Congress by not even appearing. You can imagine what would happen if you or I got a subpoena to appear in a courtroom and decided that we had some claim of attorney-client or other privilege and we were just going to blow it off. We'd be in jail before your head could spin. But that's basically what the administration has done. And so we found them in contempt, and as a part of that fine of contempt, we authorized the House to go to court and force them to comply, and that's what we're doing.
How does that work, a civil suit? What are the mechanics of that? Who files it and so forth? How do you get it done?
Well, we filed it. It was filed on Monday by the counsel for the House of Representatives in the district court near, I think, in the District of Columbia. And we'll go before the judge, and we will seek to have the court compel the executive to produce the documents and the testimony that we're legally entitled to. Because what happened here sort of added injury to injury, and that is the administration said, we're not even going to show up. We're just going to refuse anything and everything. And more than that, if you hold us in contempt, as Congress was ultimately forced to do, the contempt law says that on a finding of contempt, the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia shall bring the matter before a grand jury. The executive said, we're going to ignore that law. We're going to ignore that statute. We're going to instruct the U.S. attorney not to bring it before the grand jury. And that's what they've done. So they not only ignored lawful subpoenas, but they then instructed the U.S. attorney to ignore the statute that compelled him to bring it before the grand jury. So that's, unfortunately, where we find ourselves.
Man, it didn't take a new AG very long to just thumb his nose at Congress approving him, and he comes right in and says, "Well, never mind. We're not going to do what you want."
It is very disappointing. I have to say, I spent 6 years in the Department of Justice. I was an assistant U.S. attorney in Los Angeles. I have a very high regard for people in the department. A lot of great attorneys that work a lot of long hours and could be making a lot more money doing something else. But I had hoped when we got rid of the last attorney general, who considered himself the president's lawyer rather than lawyer for the American people, that the new attorney general would be cut from a different mold. He came from the bench. He was widely respected there. But unfortunately, I think in decisions like this, where he decided to be the president's lawyer and instruct one of his attorneys not to follow the law, not to follow the statute, and in his equivocation on the issue of torture and waterboarding, it's been very disappointing. It's not what I was hoping for. We need an attorney general of great standing, like we've had at times in the past, and unfortunately it doesn't appear that that's what we have.
Congressman Schiff, what kind of a timeline is on this? Will this languish in the courts forever and ever and a day, or will there be some quick action on this, do you think?
No, I don't think it will languish. This is obviously a very great constitutional significance. I think the district court can't help but be aware of that, and we're hoping and expecting that we'll have the case promptly reviewed by the district court. A lot will depend, I guess, on whether the executive continues to try to drag its feet and obstruct and run out the clock. But we intend to be very aggressive about it, and I think we really have to. It's not only important for this case, it's not only important to get to the bottom of, you know, why, for example, the administration pushed David Iglesias out of the job as U.S. attorney in New Mexico when he was given stellar reviews within the very department that pushed him out. Why we had members of the House, two Republicans, one in the Senate, one in the House of Representatives, calling him to ask whether a politically potent indictment against Democrats would be brought before an election, completely inappropriate. So we need to get to the bottom of it, not only for the purposes of the current investigation, but also with regard to the next Congress and the next president. And the institution itself, because if we allow the administration to simply blow off the Congress, then we really mitigate the checks and balances the founders established and do a real disservice to the country and to the institution.
Well, that's the problem I have with it all. The Congress has been rather short-sighted, I think, in a lot of these things, and they've only been thinking about the moment and what if in the future we have more egregious violations like this. We're just going to continue to let this executive branch grab more and more and more power. It's a long-range thing, and you're right. We do have to look down the road on it, and we have it. Congressman Schiff, I know you're busy. I thank you so much for taking your time to come on and let us know where we're at on this. I appreciate Speaker Pelosi's office hooking us up, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Terrific. Great talking with you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So there we are. We, once again, of course, we had Attorney General McKenzie thumbing his nose. You know, that was a hard one for me. How about you? He's just confirmed not so long ago, and he gets in, and one of the first things he does is say, "Hey, kiss it, boys. We're going to go ahead and let this president do what he wants. We're going to let Myers and Bolton thumb their noses at the United States Congress," which they did. I thought that was one of the strangest things that he just right off the bat. You know, it would have been different if we're talking about Gonzalez doing this. But we get this new guy, the crap he went through to get confirmed, although not near enough. They confirm him. What does he do? As soon as he gets in, he knifes him in the back. And I should think every member of the Congress, Republican and Democrat, would take issue with this. I should think they all would. Hey, I'm a congressman. I'm in the House. I'm in the Senate. I resent the President of the United States running over us, you know, getting rid of our sworn duty, saying, no, never mind, I'll do it my way. I would think Republican and Democrat alike would not like that. That's something I just don't understand. And I've wanted to ask a lot of these people that have voted for Bush on everything that's come down the pike on this. Hey, I know you hate Hillary Clinton. I know you don't want Barack Obama as president. But what are you going to do if one of them gets in and they start doing things you don't like? Oh, then you'll scream, you know, like a stuck pig. You'll scream bloody murder then. You know, it's the old story, I guess it's whose ox is being gored, and I'm just amazed by all this, I really am. I hate to use that word so much, it's a word that's overused nowadays, but just can't get past being fascinated by some of the things these people do these days. We had this story that came out that sickened me and sickened a lot of our troops as well. You may have heard about it by now, that dozens of our troops became sick at our military bases using water supplied by the military and a contractor once owned by Vice President Dick Cheney's former company, the Pentagon Internal Watchdog says. And we are, of course, talking about the wonderful patriotic company that we all know and love, KBR. Kellogg Brown and Root. Once a holding of Halliburton. The soldiers are getting skin abscesses, cellulitis, skin infections, diarrhea, and other illnesses after using discolored, smelly water for personal hygiene and laundry at 5 U.S. military sites in Iraq. Isn't that a hell of a note? You sign up, you go do your duty in that hellhole, you have people making millions, dare I say billions of dollars, many billions of dollars of profit, and we know KBR has that much, and Halliburton as well, and Bechtel. Billions of dollars in profit. And they're furnishing contaminated water to our soldiers? Over there in that area? Charging God knows how much for this water? They're probably pumping out of the local river to give to our soldiers? How can this be? How can this happen? Well, you know how it happens, because of money. Because of dirty, filthy money. They said that KBR's water quality was not maintained in accordance with field water sanitary standards. Oh my! Who would have guessed that? Water used for washing, for bathing, for shaving and cleaning. Water used for hygiene and laundry has to meet minimum safety standards. Hello! Because of the potential for harmful exposure through the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the cuts and wounds. I guess nobody knew that. Part of the conglomerate that Cheney once led, you know. Cheney. That name, Cheney. It sickens me. And you know he's a man without a conscience. You know he's a man that were he still ahead of that company would say, hey, we made a few bucks off it. And did you see the story yesterday about the towels? That they made him buy the towels that were charged, how much for the towels? Little hand towels. They had to have KBR stamped on them. Was it KBR or Halliburton? One or the other. They cost four times as much as the regular towels, but they told them they had to buy the ones with the stamp or the embroidery on it. A cost-plus deal, so go ahead and buy them. Cost-plus, American people are paying the bills, or else they're the ones signing the note for the borrowed money. Hell, money's no object. Go right ahead. And as they're saying on the chat room right now, and I read that not long ago, too, they charge the government $45 for a six-pack of Coke. Hey. Little over $7 for a Coke. Someone making a buck. But that's the crime of it all. Here we have our soldiers over there risking their lives day in and day out. And first of all, we went for how long without getting them proper body armor? Many of them had to buy it at home and take it with them. And we took how long to get them Humvees that were properly armored? Had them armoring their own Humvees, going through the junkyards over there, finding plate and so forth, and putting it on their own, just so they could be safe, while we're spending billions of dollars over there, where the likes of Halliburton, KBR, and Bechtel are making, and was it, what's the name of that security company, Blackwater, making hundreds of millions and billions of dollars, while our soldiers didn't even have the proper equipment, still can't get proper food and water. Being charged an arm and a leg for it, the citizens of this country. The money's all being borrowed. We've got Bush and everybody talking about, you know, being patriotic, support the troops. Hell. This administration has not supported the troops. How can it be that a company could do this and not be cut off right away? Tell me we couldn't find somebody else to do this. I'll tell you one thing we couldn't find. We couldn't find another company with the political connections that KBR has. You won't find that. There are plenty of companies, several, that could provide decent water to the soldiers over there, but none of them, None of them have the political connections. None of them have bought the connections they need like KBR has. That's why KBR hasn't been thrown out of there. That's why Halliburton hasn't been thrown out of there. It's not that they can't be replaced. They can be replaced. It's just nobody else has bought enough influence to replace them. Let's face it. That's the answer. Let's tell it like it is. Disgusting story. Absolutely disgusting story. And with all this going on about the election right now, I do want to remind everybody, and you remember the name Shalabi, Ahmed Shalabi, the exiled leader, probably one of the most sordid figures in the run-up to the Iraq War. You all remember he'd been paid by the Bush administration to bring him high-quality pre-war intelligence. I believe he's the one that brought him the guy called Curveball. Personally recommended him. He was making several hundred thousand dollars a month off of our government. He's the one that told our government that Saddam Hussein had WMDs. He's the one that helped push this country in the war. He's the one that helped convince Cheney and Bush that we really needed to get in there right away. And not so long ago, he was one in there that was in there saying, yes, we need this surge. We need it. We need it. We need it. Well, we know now that Shalabi supported John McCain, John Sidney McCain, for president in 2000, believing that the senator would be the most receptive to his agenda. Well, he's probably right about that. And I have a report from McGregor who says one of his key backers has been John McCain, who was one of the first patrons of Shalabi's grand-sounding International Committee for a Free Iraq when it was founded in 1991. McCain was Shalabi's favorite candidate in the 2000 election since Shalabi knew he would be able to free up the $97 million in military aid plus millions pushed in Congress, pushed through, and earmarked for Shalabi's exile group, the Iraqi National Congress, but held up by the Clinton State Department. And here we find out that McCain was a Shalabi backer long before Junior Bush took power. In 1997, he tried to pressure the Clinton administration into setting up an Iraqi government in exile. And that was despite the opposition from the Pentagon and the State Department. And so the next fall after that, McCain co-sponsored the Iraq Liberation Act, which committed the United States to overthrowing the Saddam and Saddam and funding opposition groups. And McCain himself, John Sidney McCain, welcomed Ahmed Shalabi, leader of the Iraqi National Congress, to Washington and pressured the administration to give him money. All the while, we had General Anthony Zinni casting doubt upon the effectiveness of the Iraqi opposition. Iraqi opposition. McCain rebuked him at a hearing of the Senate Armed Services Committee. In 2003, McCain joined four other Republican senators and asked Bush to personally clear the bureaucratic roadblocks within the State Department that blocked increased funding for the Shalabi Group. And that year, McCain said of Shalabi, he's a patriot who has the best interest of his country at heart. Well, John Sidney McCain, maybe you just ought to head on over to Iraq and ask the citizens of Iraq how they feel about Ahmed Shalabi. They all know he's a con man. Where is it he's wanted? Syria, Lebanon? He's wanted for embezzlement for millions of dollars. He's conned millions of dollars out of the U.S. government. But John Sidney McCain, ah, yes. He thinks he's the cat's meow. Folks, that's why I urge you, and I know you get tired of me talking about it. If you're involved in this campaign if you're involved in this fight between Hillary Clinton and Obama, push for your candidate. Work for your candidate. Man, that's the American way. That's the thing you need to do. But put down your weapons. Let's do remember. Let's forget the talk. I beg you. Let's forget the talk of, well, if my person doesn't get it, I'm going to vote for McCain or I'm going to stay home. That's marching right into the trap that the Republicans have set. I'm asking you to forget all that, and I'm asking you to back either one of the candidates. I know neither one of them is perfect. I know neither of them is going to do everything you want. I know neither one of them has 100% the same beliefs you do, and I know both of them, maybe one or both of them, have made you mad as hell at times. But when you're watching one of our candidates running right now and you're mad as hell at something they've said or done or one of their surrogates has done, on either side, it doesn't make any difference. Please, please look across the fence and see who's waiting over there. Got a man over there that'll bomb you everybody at the drop of a hat. We've got a guy over there that never saw a weapon he didn't like. We've got a guy over there now that's endorsing Bush's torture program. Please keep that in mind. Please do keep that in mind. I know we're going to have a all-out war coming up for the next 6 weeks or maybe even longer into the convention. And that's not my idea of a way it ideally should work out. But it's the situation that we have. And we need to make the best of it. And let's just, if we let the media know that we're not buying this BS of them keeping this war going every day by, oh, he said this, she said this, he said this, he said this. Hey, it's a primary campaign. I know you may be sick of me hearing it and saying it. But it's a primary campaign, and there's going to be mudslung. And some of it isn't going to be fair. And some of it will be below the belt. Some of it already has been below the belt. But do remember. Please do remember. There's no choice. And I know all the idealistic tendencies of a lot of you younger folks. I was younger myself. If my candidate doesn't make it, I can't legitimately vote for anybody else because it was my candidate. No. There comes a time when you got to be practical. And you got to put all that down. Put it aside. And think long and hard of what you're doing and think what's best for the United States of America amongst these candidates, the situation that we have to deal with. Maybe another time we'll have another situation to deal with. But what we have now, this is the reality of what we have now. We have Barack Obama, we have Hillary Clinton, and we have John McCain. And we cannot let John McCain have a third Bush term. It'll be a disaster for America. Be an absolute disaster. So, we're going to have to do our best to overlook the crap that's coming from the campaigns right now. It's politics, folks. I don't like it any more than you do. There's been some things said that I think are just plain horrible. But let's deal with it, and let's do remember that the White House has to be occupied by a Democrat this coming year. It has to be. I don't see how you could say it any other way. Honestly don't. Well, here we are at the end of another show. Don't know where the time went once again today. Do hope you would remember what we talked about last Thursday and think about helping to support the show maybe just a little bit. Didn't have a great success off of that. I understand times are tough, but, well, anyway, you know what we've said. You can help out by going to theguyjamesshow.com and visit our new blog. We've got a conservative guy on there that's wanting to mix it up with a few of you people. Head on over there. theguyjamesshow.com/blog. Head on over there and see it. Put your 2 cents worth on, won't you?